Good evening. Hope everyone's doing well. We are going to continue tonight with our discussion of Birchas Hamazon, and at this point to hopefully get into the actual words of Birchas Hamazon. Previously, we had discussed the concept of the obligation to recite the benching. It's an obligation from the Torah itself. And then last week we talked about the Zimun and about Shir Hamalos and where they come from and what they represent. So tonight we are going to delve into the actual structure of the Berachas Hamazon, including the words themselves. So it would be recommended, if possible, to have a bencher nearby from here on in, so we can look at the text together if we have it in front of us. That'll also contribute to our understanding of what it is we're saying. So the first off, to begin with, as we noted, Berachas Hamazon itself is made up of four brachos. The first three are the fulfillment of the Torah obligation, and we'll try to understand that a little bit. And the first one specifically is Berachas Hazan. So this first bracha of Berachas Hazan, Hazan is HaKol. So this is a special bracha in many ways. The Aruch HaShulchan emphasizes that there are tremendous themes in this bracha, that we talk about how God sustains the world. We essentially ask for a prayer that, as a prayer, that He does not deprive us of His sustenance. We emphasize that He not only gives us what we need to survive, but also to thrive. Meitiv lakol, He gives us extra. And Mechin Mazon, He creates a world where the sustenance and the nutrition for each creation is provided in its place. So all of that is a part of what we recognize in this first bracha. It contains many core themes of the whole idea of benching, and thus it comes first. And historically, it's also first, because the Gemara tells us in Maseches Brachos, on Daf Mem Ches Amud Beis, that this bracha was authored by Moshe Rabbeinu himself. And he did so when the man fell, during the time that the Jews in the desert were being sustained from heaven directly, from the man. Moshe composed this bracha, and as we'll get to the future brachos, so the second bracha was composed by Yehoshua when he went into the land, and the third bracha by David at the time of the setting up of Yerushalayim. So to go into what exactly that means, the idea that Moshe wrote it, and here we have an obligation, min ha-Torah, to recite the bracha. So the Rishonim, such as the Rashba, explain that the Torah obligation would have allowed us to thank God for His sustenance in any format that we find appropriate. And Moshe and then Yehoshua, each in their own time, came and they composed a specific text, and that became the obligation to use that text. And as the Ramban writes in his glosses to the Rambam's Sefer HaMitzvos, that there are other texts that could have worked. So, for example, the Gemara mentions in a more simple form, Brich Rachmana More Dahai Pita, blesses God, the master of this bread. That would have sufficed on a level from the Torah itself. And the various prophets came and they set the text in a more formal fashion. Sounds like from the Medrash Tanchuma that until they came into the land of Israel, so they only recited this one bracha. It's an interesting question as to when we say, we discussed a little bit 2 weeks ago, when we say that the Torah obligates us to recite this first part of Berachas Hamazon, so does that mean that all three of the brachos are from the Torah itself, or is there one bracha from the Torah itself? So it sounds like from the Medrash that it's really that one, but it could be that there's more included, even in the Torah obligation. So, for example, the Reish Rav, who's Rav Aaron Levine, was the grandfather of Rabbi Dr. Aaron Levine, the Reish Rav notes that the Pasuk in Parshas Ekev, we'll read in 2 weeks, when we talk about this obligation of Berachas Hamazon, V'yachalta v'savata v'arachta Hashem Elokeach al-aretz asher nasan, that we bless God on the land that He has given us, So the Torah is instructing us regarding the future, that after we enter into the land, so then we will have to bless God regarding the land that He gave to us. So before they entered into the land, they didn't say that second part of Berachas HaMazon and from that point on. But once it became relevant, so that was included in the obligation of the Berachas HaMazon even on a Torah level. So Moshe said his part at the time when the man was falling. Some of the commentaries explain that here it doesn't mean when the man started falling. That was before the Torah was given, before we had an obligation. There's an essay about this in the Sefer Birchas Haaretz, which is a Sefer on Maseches Brachos. It was written by a great Rosh Yeshiva, Tzvi Toker, where he explains that when the Talmud tells us that Moshe composed this bracha when the man was falling, it doesn't mean that he did this as a fulfillment of the obligation of Berachas HaMazon, because that obligation would come later. The Torah wasn't given yet. But rather, Moshe, in appreciation of the fact that the Jews were being sustained at this level in this miraculous way, so he was inspired to record that in a bracha. He was inspired to compose this text that recognizes God's miraculous sustenance of the Jewish people. And then, once there was a mitzvah later of Berachas HaMazon, so then this text was inserted as a fulfillment of that mitzvah, and therefore it has a dual aspect to it. So it fulfills this obligation to recite Berachas HaMazon, and also it's a commemoration of Moshe's appreciation for God's sustenance to the Jewish people in this miraculous way in the desert. And therefore, that's essentially a theme that comes back again and again. It means that the second bracha, that we'll talk about later, so that's something which is there to also represent the blessing of entering into the land and commemorates that. And that's something that is inherent within the bracha itself, and that becomes included in its message, even as it fulfills this Torah obligation. And the third bracha, which is going to talk about Yerushalayim, also that's going to have that in the theme, and still is also going to be a part of the fulfillment. But as Rav Toker points out, there is a... Sorry, I have a noise there in the back. Sorry about that disruption. But that essentially there's a difference between the first bracha and the later ones, because the later ones do shift at different points of time. So what Yehoshua said when they entered into the land, so that reflects his particular experience at that time, and we may have it slightly different in our generation. And when David HaMelech was setting up the government in Yerushalayim, that reflects his particular status at that moment, and we have it slightly differently. But the first bracha of Berachas HaMazon, that's going to always be fixed, because that was composed before the mitzvah was given, and therefore when the mitzvah was an obligation, we were given that text in its fixed way. And the Ma'bit in the Sefer Beis Elokim, the Ma'bit tells us that this text that we have for the first bracha of Berachas HaMazon is exactly the same, word for word, the way Moshe said it, and even those parts that are later included in Tehillim, that are psukim from Tehillim, so we can wonder how exactly historically does that work out. So the Ma'bit explains that they were first authored by Moshe Rabbeinu, and David HaMelech later on established them in Tehillim as psukim based on Moshe Rabbeinu's earlier authorship. So the only thing that changes is the word ka'amur. For those who have that, ka'amur posechus yadecha u'mashbia l'chol chai ratzon, that pasuk was originally in Moshe's text, but once it was later a pasuk, so that word ka'amur was added in to reflect the fact that it's now a pasuk. But other than that, it's all the same, it's all the original text. Now, it's also interesting, the idea that this is recited to reflect the time when the man was given, that's itself interesting, because it's not clear at all that the man would have been something that we would have benched on. that the man is not michamishas mine hadaga. Now we know we only bench on the five different grains, and the man was not of those substances. So it's interesting that the man is the inspiration for the text that we use for Berchas Hamazon. So there is a discussion, just parenthetically, as to what bracha actually would have been recited on the man. And this is a topic about which there are a number of opinions. According to some, the Stechemer, for example, said there's no bracha that's recited specifically on the man. There's actually quite a literature about this, so it's nice to reflect upon, if we had some man, what bracha would we make on it? So the Stechemer had this view that there was no bracha. Others, the Chai Adam, for example, asserted that it's certainly not hamotzi, that the hamotzi lechem min haaretz would not be applicable to the man. The Ramami Panu suggested the text of Hamotzi Lechem Min HaShamayim, that he brings out bread from the sky. And the Sefer Chassidim has that a little differently, Hanosein Lechem Min HaShamayim, while the Sefer Torah Lishma has it, Hamamtir Lechem Min HaShamayim, that he made the bread rain from the sky. So one way or another, it doesn't seem like this is the substance that we would have recited Berchas Hamazon on. It's also interesting because even if we were to make it taste like bread, as Rav Yosef Engel points out in his commentary to Maseches Brachos, so we had the ability to make the man taste like whatever we wanted to. But even if it tasted like bread, that wouldn't justify a bracha of Birchas Hamazon on it, because normally in halacha, we go not only by the taste, but it should also have the substance. So there is an opinion in the Talmud that the man actually took on the substance of whatever it is we had in mind. But one way or another, it's interesting that here the man is being held up as the inspiration for the text of Berchas Hamazon, even though it's not likely that the man itself is something that would have justified a Berchas Hamazon. So this is a topic of much discussion, how exactly there is this connection here. The Mabit writes that Moshe was concerned that when Moshe saw the man was sustaining the Jewish people, he was afraid that maybe that's only in his chus, maybe it's only in Moshe's merit that the man was being provided. And after he was no longer alive, what would sustain the Jewish people? So therefore, he was inspired to compose this as a prayer, as a hope that there will be continued sustenance for the Jewish people. Just like during his lifetime the man was there, so too there would be sustenance for the Jews in the future as well. There is also another theme to the man. There is a beautiful Sefer on Berchas Hamazon written by Rav Nachum Brusnik. He goes through the whole text, and he notes that the Talmud suggests that the notion of kvius, the idea of formality, that we can have a meal that is more than just eating here and there, but has an actual status to it, was not something that the Jews experienced until the man was provided. That gave them not only the ability to stay alive, but a sense of formal meal status, that kind of experience. And we know that Berchas Hamazon is connected to that, and in particular, Zimun, as we discussed last week, is connected to a notion of kvius. And the concept of Zimun, we spoke about also a little bit last week, has particular connection to this bracha, to the Berchas Hazan. So, for example, as we noted, that if somebody is not ready to bench, and everyone else is benching, and he's going to answer the Zimun and then continue eating, he's supposed to pause his eating for that first bracha, the bracha of Hazan, and listen to that. And that bracha, as the Gemara indicates in a number of ways, is associated with the Zimun more than the rest of benching. It reflects this notion of kvius, of formality, of having an established meal, and it is something that is particular to this bracha more than the others. And it's also reflective of additional elements. In the Sefer Agudas Ezov, he notes that the message of the man was that not only would the Jews be kept alive, not only would they be sustained, that much, as grateful as we are, we understand that's to be expected. If God is going to create people and take them out of Egypt, So it makes sense that he has to provide them with basic sustenance in order to stay alive. But the idea of the man, this glorious food which could taste like anything and provided not only basic survival, but it gave nourishment in the fullest sense, and it was comparable to the experience of eating at God's table, Mishulchan el Shalmakom. So that was something that was unique, and it was because of that experience that Moshe was composing this bracha to reflect that and to commemorate that forever. And that could also explain, there is an opinion in the Talmud, which is somewhat striking, that reflects this idea that the bracha of Hazan, this first bracha, is a part of the Zimun. The way Rashi explains an opinion in the Talmud, it sounds like that if one was eating by himself, if one was not a part of a Zimun, not only would he leave out Rabbi Sayyid Varech and all of that, but he would leave out the first bracha itself. And that, as later commentaries point out, how could that be? There's an obligation in the Torah, as we've seen, to bench, and that certainly includes the first bracha. And yet, here we're seeing that it is so connected to the notion of Zimun that there was an opinion that without a Zimun, you wouldn't even say the bracha. So perhaps the idea is that the notion that it reflects Mishulchan el Shalmakom, as the Aguras Ezov is explaining, that it represents this higher level of connection, that God is not only keeping you alive, but he's doing so in supernatural grand style, that is reflected in this bracha, and that this could be interpreted in the context of a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, that the Mishnah says that if three eat together and there is Divrei Torah between them, so Reb Shimon Bar Yochai says it is as if they ate Meshulchan El Shalmakom, it is as if they ate from God's table. And the Bar Tanuro, in his commentary there, writes that even though the Mishnah requires that they have to have Divrei Torah between them in the context of the meal, but, says the Bar Tanuro, even if they don't have Divrei Torah, but they recite this bracha, the Berachas Hazan, that also counts. So perhaps that's the idea, that the bracha reflects in a particular way this relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this acknowledgement of his particular connection, not only to the world, but to the Jewish people especially. So that counts as Divrei Torah. And therefore, that elevates the status of this first bracha and creates something new, which reflects both formality and the idea of Torah study itself. Many of the commentaries note that this bracha is recited in the third person, that we are talking about God, and that afterwards, when we switch to the second bracha, to Noda, so then we are talking in the second person, Noda Lecha Hashem Elokeinu, we are talking to God. But in this first bracha, we're talking about God in the third person with a greater sense of formality in the reference. So some of the commentaries point out that perhaps this is reflective of a statement in the Gemara, in Maseches Yuma, where the Gemara talks about the shift in relationship between the Jewish people to God before and after they entered the land. That if there's a comparison here, a muscle of a marriage, so when the Jews were in the desert, when they were still in the Midbar, so the relationship was like a kala while she was still in her father's household. She hasn't yet entered her husband's household. It's not that familiar yet. And once they entered into the land, so then it was like the kala in her husband's household, then it was more familiar. So the idea of a shift from the third person to the second person could be understood in that sense. And the Bach, commenting on the side of the Torah, the Bach says, so that would seem to indicate that there's a higher level to the second bracha than to the first bracha. But still, Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the first bracha, so we start with that one. But perhaps we could understand that it doesn't necessarily have to represent a different and a greater status to the second bracha, but the whole theme of the first bracha is the recognition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his particular connection to the whole world, that he gives to all of creation. He gives to Kol Basar, that he gives to all of humanity, to the whole Olam, but also, as was inspired by the man, that he supports and he sustains the Jewish people in a elevated, in a supernatural fashion. All of that is the message of this first bracha. So this is all a statement that we're making. So it makes sense, essentially, that we are talking about God even more than we are talking to God in this bracha, and that's what the pasuk itself indicates, "Uverachta es Hashem Elokecha," and therefore, that's the formula, that's essentially the message that this first bracha is suggesting. So, in any event, with all that, so now we have a few minutes to start looking at the actual words itself. We'll probably get some of them in, and then we'll continue into next week. So, if you have a bench in front of you, so you see the first word is Baruch. That's a familiar word to say blessed. The Torah actually notes that there were those who added more, that there were those who would say Baruch Maspia L'Re'evim, blessed is he who feeds the hungry, Baruch Mashkil Etzmeim, he who gives liquid to the thirsty, then Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam, that there was this expanded formulation. But nonetheless, the Torah says it's not really right to say that. And that's indeed our practice not to say that, because we are committed to the Matbeah HaBracha, to the format of the bracha as Chazal transmitted to us. And we say, Kol HaMosif Gareya, that to add is to take away. So therefore, it's not actually proper to say this. But nonetheless, there was a tradition that some had to say this. And the Mordechai quotes from the Sefer HaPardes, which was written by a student of Rashi, that there were some who had extra words when they were benching on their own, as opposed to benching Bezimun, they would have this extra introduction. But in any event, that's not the practice that we have today to add on that extra language. So we say, okay, we start right away with Baruch Atah Hashem, Elokeinu Melech HaOlam. So we recognize God's majesty, we say Melech, that we understand. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Brachos, in the end of the first parak, that any bracha that does not acknowledge God's majesty, that doesn't have malchus, is not a bracha. So in order to have the format of a bracha, we have to have Melech HaOlam, and we also have to have God's name included. So the idea of Baruch Atah Hashem, that's this notion of Shem U'Malchus. This idea that we have to have majesty and also God's name in order to constitute a bracha. The Minchas Chinuch suggested that this requirement is a rabbinic requirement. You could have a bracha without it, but others disagreed, especially in this context. So, for example, the Adaret, who was the father-in-law of Rav Kook, in his writings, he noted that it seems explicit from the Pasuk that the requirement of God's name is there. Uverachta es Hashem Elokecha, that is a part of the structure of a bracha min haTorah. It actually affects other things, because when we want to talk about a bracha, and we want to avoid a bracha levatala, so we'll often change the words and say, instead of saying God's name, so we'll put in some reference to God's name without saying the actual name, under the assumption that we're not risking a bracha levatala if we're not actually mentioning God's name. But there are those, Rabbi Kiva Eger had a tshuva where he suggested that the idea of a bracha levatala could exist even without God's name. It's quite a stringency, so we'd have to be even more careful when referring to a text of a bracha casually. So that was a part of this discussion as to the requirement of Shem U'Malchus, that God's name should be in the bracha together with His Majesty. Is that a Torah requirement, that is part of the bracha, or is that a rabbinic requirement? Okay, but we note that Hazan es Olam Kulo, that He is the one who sustains the whole world. And here the Talmud discusses that even though we only bench on bread, but if one, for example, had dates, and he thought they were bread, there was something made out of dates, and he thought it was a bread concoction, so he benched. So he is in fulfillment anyway, because they also provide sustenance. So midei dezaini, they also provide nutrition. But the Tzlach, the author of the Noda Behuda in his commentary, explains that that shouldn't confuse us, to give us the impression that this is a reference to the type of food when we say hazan. Again, this is about HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. This is referring to the identity of God, the one who provides for the whole world. So therefore, it has a more expansive meaning. So he is the one who sustains. Es ha'olam kulo b'tuvo, the whole world through his goodness. And the commentary of Rav Nosson Shapiro highlights here and later on also that we say b'tuvo and not mituvo. That mituvo, from his goodness, that would have perhaps suggested some kind of a limitation, that there is this big storage of goodness and he gives us a little part of it. So we don't want to suggest any limitation, so instead we say bituvo, that through his goodness he sustains all of us. Bechein, bechesed, uverachamim. So here there are different texts, whether there are vavs throughout, bechein, uverchesed, uverachamim, bechein, bechesed, uverachamim. And the Aruch HaShulchan discusses this idea of there being different texts, that some understand that there are vavs connecting throughout because they're essentially synonymous. But it could be that that's not necessarily the case, not necessarily synonymous, that Bechein, Bechesed, Rachamim represent different levels, and the fact that different individuals in different circumstances will experience God's blessings in different ways. So Chein is a language of favor. We sometimes find that it means above and beyond what you even deserve. And the language we find is attached to Noach, Noach Motza Chein, he had a special favor in God's eyes. So that's a reference to those who are very wealthy and have tremendous material benefits in this world. They are the recipients of Chein. Chesed is the idea of those who are in between. They're not very wealthy, but they're not poor either. And so therefore, they are recipients of God's Chesed, of God's kindness. And Rachamim connotes mercy, and that refers to those who have a much harder time surviving, but who manage. So essentially what they are experiencing is God's compassion, and each one has a different point of reference, and all of it is being recognized in this bracha. So that's a point that's discussed by the Aruch HaShulchan. The son of the Aruch HaShulchan was the author of the Sefer Torah Tamima, and his name, Reb Baruch Epstein, he also composed a sefer on the Siddur called the Baruch She'amar. So in that sefer, so he also discusses the difference between these terms, and he reflects upon the fact, it's consistent with this point, that chesed and rachamim are not synonymous, even though they are compatible terms, but they don't mean the same thing. The idea being that rachmanis is when one feels a sense of compassion because he sees suffering, and he recognizes that he can't let the suffering go on, he has to do something to make a difference, while chesed is more proactive. Chesed are those who seek out how to be helpful, even when it's not so blatant that there's a need. So we recognize all of these different attributes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is showing to the world in different ways, in different places, at different times. Chein b'chesed of rachamim, and as we noted before, lechem l'chol basar, that's a reference of all of creation, including all the animals, are also sustained. Ki li'olam chasdo. And then Uvtuvo HaGadol. Okay, so that's going to take us into another few minutes. I think we're almost out of time, so we'll have to continue this second half of the first bracha, God willing, next week. And hopefully we'll be able to then continue from there into the second bracha itself. So I will wish you a meaningful beginning of the 9 days in a short while, and hopefully we should shoot through our appreciation of God's giving and His chesed and His rachamim to us, merit a reversal of the path, and we should find a speedy redemption, and we shouldn't have to fast next week on Tisha B'Av.
Rabbi Feldman.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Outstanding. Yashar Koach.
Yashar Koach to you. Have a wonderful night.
God bless you, Rabbi.
God bless you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Beautiful.
Thank you.